Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining me for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So we have a great show today. It's just going to be a little bit different than our usual Friday show. Unfortunately, Alex is having major computer issues and I have a crazy day at work, so I have to get in this recording now. So it'll be me solo at the top of the pod. I want to talk about the significance of the Inter-Liverpool match and the fact that Salah scored in that match and what that says about the growing gap between the Premier League and Serie A. So we'll talk about it at the top. Since it's Friday and there are Serie A games, we of course have 1,000 names on deck ready with his game picks. And then we have an outstanding guest, Richard Hall, who been at Football Italia for ages and now works at Inter on their podcast, their Twitch. Great stuff there. We didn't focus too much on Inter with Richard because I always like to talk about the whole league with him. So I think you'll enjoy that. And then at the end of the show, I talked a little bit about the Oscar nominations, the kind of some things to look for, maybe give you a couple of hints on some movies that you might enjoy watching. So at the top, I want to talk about the Inter Liverpool game. And I thought that was very significant because I think in a lot of ways it really showed, you know, the situation that Serie A is in compared to the Premier League. And I would assume, you know, Serie A isn't the only league who's kind of in this situation with the Premier League. But if you know, my focus is pretty narrow. I really just watch Calcio, so I can't really say. But I think that game really showed the huge gap between the two leagues. Because look at it this way. Whether you agree with me that Inter's the best team in Serie A or not, Inter have the best offense in Serie A. They've scored the most goals. They've put up a lot of goals. They go up against Liverpool, and I thought Inter played well for 75 minutes or so. I wouldn't say they dominated, but they absolutely held their own against Liverpool. I think, you know, yeah, Barella wasn't there, but Vidal, I thought, had a good game. I don't think I can chalk it up to, oh, you know, had Barella been there, this is a totally different game. I don't think it's the case for that. So Inter really give Liverpool their best shot, play a really, really good game for their standards. And the only thing they had to show for that was really that one shot on goal that Çalhanoğlu had when he hit the crossbar. So that's the highest scoring offense in Serie A. That's all they could muster against Liverpool, who, you know, of course, are one of the elite teams in the Premier League. But I thought, you know, what was very significant in this game, and that shows really even more the gap and kind of the situation between the leagues, is the fact that Salah scored. And, you know, I think depending on which team you have a vested emotional interest in, and I would assume almost everyone listening to this is definitely more on the Serie A side, if not just on the Serie A side, you probably look at it more from this Serie A perspective. It probably isn't the most thrilling perspective. But I think Salah is, unfortunately, if you're a Serie A fan, like a case study of what we can expect. So Salah came to Italy, sensational at Fiorentina, fantastic at Roma, went up a whole other notch, goes to Liverpool, and then really reaches his apex, wins a Champions League there. I unfortunately think, you know, that's going to keep happening. You know, this isn't just Serie A, but the financial situation for so many clubs in Italy, unfortunately, do make it a reality that I think this Salah situation is just going to keep happening. You know, last summer, we saw a lot of the top earners in the league, almost all of them, of the highest paid players in the league left. De Ligt being in Dybala are still there. And there's no guarantee that both are going to be there a long time, although there seems to be, especially on the De Ligt side, a little bit of encouraging momentum. But we had Donnarumma, Ronaldo, Lukaku, like Hakimi, some of the highest paid players in the league leave. And I've been saying for a long time, I think Serie A is really looking at wages to kind of narrow that down. Who was able to keep a lot of their players was Inter. But they also had to sell. They had sold Lukaku and Hakimi before. So the reason they could go ahead and extend a bunch of these players, that helped a ton. Juve, of course, had that amazing January transfer window, but they are the exception because they have Xhor. And I've been saying this for a while, that Juve's biggest competitive advantage right now is just having a legacy parent company that's owned the club for a long time and that has massive deep pockets. Like Xhor has his deep pockets as pretty much almost everyone out there, but you know, except for, you know, the states or whatnot that running teams, but they are loaded ownership, so they were able to pump in a lot of cash to the team. So those are kind of the exceptions. Is Inter going to be able to keep this up long term? There are question marks on their owners. So with few exceptions, I think unfortunately we are going to see a lot of these big name players go to the Premier League. Are there some exception? Of course. Theo Hernandez, I think, is kind of the exception that proves the rule. I mean, this is a guy who had offers from PSG, Man City, but Serie A is still a great place to develop. And I think that's kind of the hope, that more players see it that way. And maybe Theo sees it as beyond a place to develop, maybe a place where he wants to be. And I think Milan has that edge with defenders, with Maldini card, I think certainly helps. And who knows, could we have some instances where a player that's linked to the Premier League and Serie A ultimately goes to Serie A? Sure, we might see Botman be exactly that situation. But I think, unfortunately, these are going to be more the exception rather than the rule there. And, you know, this also makes me think a lot about the Lautaro situation, because there's been a lot of buzz. And I think it's a lot a prisoner of the moment saying, OK, we had this great game against Liverpool, this great performance. We couldn't really get any shots off. We need to upgrade our strikers. And Lautaro's been in a slump, not just in this game, but how do you really upgrade from Lautaro? So first, you need a team who wants to pay a huge amount of money for Lautaro right now. Is there maybe a ton of market right now? Maybe not. So look, some people would say, well, Inter, their window to sell him was last season. I would say it was impossible for them to sell him on top of Lukaku and Hakimi. At that point, you also sell him. You really are saying this is a total fire sale. And, you know, there were some reports. I never bought them. I never really talked about them because they sounded just BS to me, that literally every player at Inter was available at a certain price. We saw that not to be true. But Inter, you know, if you think, oh, Inter missed their window with Lautaro, I just don't think you can sell a third big name starter the same season. So if Inter wants to upgrade Lautaro, they need to get a huge amount of money and then go get someone who's better. But then I would say, why would the team that's going to give Inter a ton of money not go get that upgrade themselves? And I think that's kind of the dilemma Inter are in. Are there ways to upgrade kind of the striker position? You could bring Lukaku back, and that's another hope for, you know, the Serie A Premier League thing is, you know, back in the day, my friend Rosso Anto at Beyond the Pitch, we used to always say, hey, you know, these Italian sporting directors selling these players for huge amounts of money to the Premier League and then bringing them back at a fraction of the cost. And the most obvious one was Felipe Anderson, who went for $40 million to West Ham, comes back to Lazio, essentially for a percentage on a future resale. Essentially, that was the deal. So are there going to be more of those? Possibly. So how could Inter upgrade bringing Lukaku back? But he also works out great with Lautaro. Another thing Inter could do is sign Dybala, and then maybe you try Dybala-Lautaro, or you do Dybala-Dzeko and you sell Dybala. But Dybala, look, I'm a fan of his, but he's not the easiest player to put on the pitch. At least Lautaro, he fits in a lot of different ways. So it's really kind of a dilemma for Inter. I don't think it's that as easy as some people seem to think for them to upgrade that position. Because again, if a team's going to give Inter a ton of money for Lautaro, they would just go get the guy that's better than him. But I'll leave you with some hope. If you are a Serie A fan, we've done over 430 of these episodes. The thing that I'm most jealous that I heard on that I didn't come up on the pod, and we've had so many brilliant guests, so many amazing takes on there, but the one that really stands out to me, I'm still so mad I didn't come up with this first, was our friend Anthony Locascio, who's based in Australia, and we need to get him back on the pod. We had him once. He was great. And I love the line that he said that the Premier League is like Marvel movies right now. They have all the money. They got all the eyeballs are on that. But Serie A is the independent movie. So it's the Tarantino, the P.T. Anderson. This is us. And I think we can embrace it. And look, you know, when people say, oh, Serie A isn't great, I would say, well, define what great is. Are we saying in comparison to other teams when they face them in Europe? Fair. They're not great in that sense, but the games are great. It's extremely engaging to watch the games. This season, Serie A has proven that the big name players can leave, but they can kind of reset, kind of a little bit like season 4 of The Wire, how they move on from Avon and Stringer and they introduce these kids and they kind of reset. And I think that's what we're going to keep seeing with Serie A. So that's the memo. Miss you, Alex. Look forward to chatting with you next week. Okay, so now let's get to game picks with our dear friend Thousand Names. Said, yeah, has some exciting games this weekend. The first one's actually taking place on the day we are recording. So probably by the time you'll hear it, you might know if Thousand Names was spot on or not with the first one. So as always, you guys know the drill. I asked Thousand to send me 3 picks. I don't know which games he's going to pick. And we all pick our winner. And I also like to read his game picks in Italian to make a little bit more fun. So the first game is the game from today, the Derby della Mole, the Derby in Turin. Juve today is hosting Torino. Thousand Names has it 1-1. Goals by Lukic and McKinney. He says that Cuadrado is going to miss a penalty. He says Bremer is going to humiliate Vlahovic and is going to make Torino president Kaido become very emotional. He says Juric is going to destroy Allegri tactically, and the Torino as a city is Granata, which is the color of Torino, the team, not Juve, in this derby. In Italian, Juve Torino 1-1, Lukic McKinney, Cuadrado sbaglia rigore, Bremer umilia Vlahovic e fa commuovere Kaido, Juric distrugge Allegri tatticamente, Torino è Granata. I'm actually going to go with Juve. Torino are in a slump recently. Juve obviously have been surging in Serie A. I'm going to go Juve 2-0. I'll go goal by Vlahovic and 1 by Morata. Next up, Inter, who are looking to get back on track. Hosting Sassuolo. Interesting game there for sure. Thousand has Inter winning 2-0. Goal by Skriniar and D'Ambrosio. He says Berardi, Lautaro, and Perisic are all going to miss a penalty. Handanovic is going to have a great game. And he says Limone Inzaghi is going to get some revenge from the Champions League and is going to return to the top of the standings. But he says that De Vrij is finished as a top defender. He struggled against Liverpool a little bit too. Okay, in Italian, Inter Sassuolo 2-0, Skriniar, D'Ambrosio, Berardi, Lautaro sbagliano rigore, Handanovic mostruoso, Limone vendica la Champions e torna virtualmente in vetta, De Vrij finito. I agree with Thousand. I'm going to go with Inter. I'm going to say Lautaro gets back on track. I'm going to go 3-1 Inter. I'm going to give 2 goals to Lautaro. 1 to Barella, is going to be fresh after not playing. And I'll give Scamacca, who is linked to Inter, the goal for Sassuolo. Final game, and this is tomorrow, Saturday. If you are in the Boston area, you can check out the Boston Milan fan club over at Ducali. It's in the North End. It's like kind of closer to Charlestown. Very cool spot. If you're ever in the Boston area, that's a great place to catch any Serie A game, especially when Milan are there. It sounds like Thousand has a nice gift for the Boston Milan fan club. He says Milan are going to win 8-0 away against Salernitana. 3 goals by Leao, 3 goals by Rebic, 2 by Tonali. He says Pioli gives a warm welcome to Nicola. Pirlo had been linked to the Salernitana job, but they go with Nicola, who's been the architect of some pretty amazing comebacks in the race to avoid relegation. And so in Italian, Leao, Rebic, tripletta, Tonali, doppietta, Pioli dal benvenuto a Nicola, Brahim male pure contro una squadra di Lega Pro, Tonali umilia Locatelli a distanza. In English, Pioli is going to give a welcome to Nicola. Brahim worse, even against a team that belongs in Lega Pro, that is third division in Italy. And he says Tonali, from a distance, is going to humiliate Locatelli. Milan have been playing well. Look, Salernitana are pretty frisky, but they are in trouble after drawing two games that they needed in the race to avoid relegation. So I have Milan 2-0. Actually, I'll give a goal to Messias and 1-2. Leao, who I've been really impressed with. So before we get to our friend Richard Hall, which will take a nice, look at all the main storylines in Serie A instead of focusing on one team, which we usually do in the final part of the pod, I'm going to introduce the part of the podcast for our patrons. If you enjoy our shows on Friday, consider becoming a patron. You'll get an episode on Tuesday. It's usually me solo, but I'm going to start bringing in a little bit more guests there. We also have a tier with some awesome articles. Today, our friend Enrico Passarella had a great article on up-and-coming defenders who are specialists at three at the back in Serie A. Fascinating stuff as always by him. You'll be joining a great community of like-minded calcio fans and get to ask us questions. Well, I'm very excited to welcome our next guest. He's been a regular on here since the beginning of the pod. It's close to 5 years already since we've had Richard Hall on. In the past, when I introduced Richard, he was, one of the head writers at Football Italia, founder of the outstanding Gentleman Ultra website. But now he's expanded. He started first collaborating with Fiorentina's English part of their site, doing a fantastic job. And recently, and I'm thrilled this happened, he became the host of the official Inter English language account. Really, really great stuff. He also does some stuff on Twitch. So today, if you enjoyed Richard's appearance, make sure to spread the word on the great content going on at Inter. So Richard, it's always a real pleasure to chat calcio with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Thank you, David. That was a lovely intro. And I think more realistically, excuse me, and the reason I'm doing it with the English-speaking clubs is because my Italian is quite poor at the moment. It's still not where it needs to be. So sometimes when you follow an Italian football, you really want to be able to reach out, see a bit more in English. So if the clubs are doing a little bit more, then, that's even better. So, yeah, but thank you for the intro. Sure.
And they have a great person like you to take care of this, which I'm thrilled. So let's start here. We're recording this Thursday morning, day after Inter's match against Liverpool. Obviously very interesting for a lot of reasons. You've been following Inter closely, but you're also based in the UK, so you're very familiar with the Premier League. So we could go in so many different directions, so I'll just keep it very vague. What did you make of Inter's performance yesterday against Liverpool, the result, and what that might mean big picture?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the things about the game yesterday was the fact that Inter, I think, did exceptionally well for 70% of the time. 70 minutes, sorry. And, I think they can have to draw some positives out of this. Now, a lot of people will probably focus on the negatives, and there were some. I mean, first of all, if you lose 2-0 in the Champions League tie, it's a negative. Were Inter clinical enough? No, probably not. Have the Italian media taken another bite out of La Toro? Yes, and maybe some ways, you can understand why they've done that. But when Simone Inzaghi looks at that and that game, and he looks against Liverpool, who, have to be put up there at this moment in time with Europe's elite teams, and Inter played better than 70 minutes, especially when you look at the pace that Inter played at, and you look at the fact that they, they've had a disgracefully difficult January and February, playing the likes of obviously Juventus, Napoli, Roma, Milan, Atalanta, amongst others, with two extra time periods. I was really impressed, really impressed. I think what it shows, and Inter, you've got to take it in context, Inter, and this is not me trying to be on brand now, this is a fact of what I think, and Inter on, not a journey, but they're progressing every season, and Inzaghi's been there 10 minutes, and he's changed the good work that Conte had done, and he's moved them forward. It was a lesson for Inter, if anything else, but not a lesson where they were told this is, demolished or anything like that. It was a lesson that, at that elite level, you look at how many chances there were, and Liverpool took them and Inter didn't. And those are the small margins. You can look at the performances Skriniar, Perisic, even Vidal was a surprise. And most of the way through the team, it was positive. Good performances. Dumfries was excellent and he really grew into the game. Tactically, I think Inzaghi got it right. And yeah, okay, Martinez, there is still questions. Can he be consistent at this level? In the Champions League, and I would argue that Inter haven't really been consistent at this level up to now. You know, they've had two seasons before, which wasn't great. So, yeah, look, the tie, even if it is over, if we're going to put a positive spin, is it the worst thing? No, because domestically they've still got the Coppa d'Italia, and of course the Scudetto to hopefully go for. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not too concerned overall, and I think it taught us more about where they need to be in the Champions League next season than anything else.
Yeah, I completely agree with so much of what you said there. So let's pivot and let's talk about the Scudetto. So look, you know, you literally work for Inter. I know I've been, you know, for a while pretty bullish on Inter winning the Scudetto. I still feel that way. But obviously, as we're recording, Milan are rightfully top of the standings with one game in hand that Inter, you know, obviously can get back there. Like, look, you know, I think the fact that Inter are the defending champs and they brought back most of the starting lineup to me is like a really, really big advantage here. And look, you know, them dropping out of the Champions League almost certainly after this round, in a sense, helps a little bit. So do you kind of... You'll probably have more at stake here. Do you kind of feel that way as well as Inter? Do you maybe saying it's their Scudetto to lose is maybe a little bit too upfront, but you consider them the favorites right now?
Personally, yes, because not just do I work with them, but also as a fan, you know, which I'll be quite honest about that. I don't think it's certainly a foregone conclusion. Still, you know, but when we spoke last time, I still think they have the best squad. Nothing's changed there, despite the fact that we'll come to Juventus, you know, obviously the great work that they did in the market. But this home straight, in a sense, now, I'm quite hopeful because Inter have got quite a lot of the big guns out of the way. There's still some big games to go, of course. And again, as we said, you know, the potential exit from the Champions League will help. But listen, from what the little in a sense that I hear, especially speaking, you know, with Thomas Lawrence, who does the podcast with me and spends a lot of time with the players, the mood's really boisterous and really upbeat. They certainly like working under Inzaghi because he lets the players express themselves a lot more. Training's more fun. And, you know, I think the mood overall, even after the derby, was okay, dust ourselves off and go for Roma, which they did. And I expect no less from this. So still positive, but absolutely, you know, you look at what Milan are doing, obviously Napoli, Juventus have strengthened, then, you know, there's other teams that, who could still take points off, you know, any of those, the top teams, Atalanta, of course. Yeah, it's going to be tough, but I'm still confident.
You mentioned about the schedule is a really good point. They still have Juve, but they face pretty much all the other top teams. And Inter has shown that they do beat up on the lower table teams under Inzaghi. That has been pretty consistent. But let's talk about Milan, because they certainly deserve a lot of praise. They are at the top of the standings now. So let me ask you this, and I've asked this to numerous guests because I think it's just really a great way to talk about their season. I think the reason they are legitimate Scudetto contenders again, despite the departures in the summer, is how much improved Leao and Tonali are. I mean, they really, really took a huge step forward, and how well Maignan replaced Donnarumma. I mean, it's not outrageous to make a case that Maignan has been just as good as Donnarumma and maybe even gave him a little bit more. So out of these three players, who has surprised you the most this season?
A word on Maignan, I think, first, because what he's doing for me is exactly as you say, David, he's near to exactly what Donnarumma was doing in the sense of his presence, his ability. Oh, they're different goalkeepers, don't get me wrong, but he's got that security behind that the back four can look for. So, you know, obviously some strengths he has differ, of course, but he seems to be giving them everything that Donnarumma was giving them without the drama. And that helps in any team, you know. It was always raising its head and there was issues and it just sometimes the mood in the camp of the players, of the team, the fans, it all needs to be unified for something to be achieved. And I think that helps. And I think there is that unity with the Milan team. But Tonali, brilliant for me. Really, really impressed. I think even moving forward, I think he is just such an intelligent player that he will grow and grow. But for me, it's Leao. But if, for me, just on the basis that he looks like he's really changed his game into the fact of when he first turned up in Milan, he was there and he was, yes, he had tricks and speed and he would just want to beat a player and potentially get pushed out wide. He's changed, he's more direct. And the Pioli, he's really got a bit more of a thirst for goals in him. And he just looks as though he's more accomplished now. So for Milan, it's great because we're seeing, I think Rafael Leao shows what a lot of players are doing under Pioli and it's becoming a better version of themselves. But Leao is probably doing it to the ultimate degree.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I found Leao to be one of the most frustrating players in Serie A last season. I thought he was maybe following the Balotelli career path, and he's been sensational this season. If someone told me, hey, right now Leao's maybe the most talented player in Serie A, I wouldn't argue too much. He makes it look just really so effortless. It's pretty amazing. So let's talk about another very talented player in the league. And I think he would be in the conversation with Leao. He's been doing it longer, which is Dybala. So I want to ask you this, because Juve has been negotiating with Dybala this contract extension. But I want to ask you, how much does Vlahovic's arrival, in your opinion, change what Juve should do with Dybala?
This is a really difficult one because Dybala as a player, I absolutely love, especially. But for me, I think that Dybala potentially for his career and for Juventus, it may be better that he moves on and maybe not to a club of the size of Juventus, which is strange to say for such a player with such incredible ability. I think if I'm looking at it from a Dybala point of view, he wants, okay, of course he wants the money. So that limits him then. What does he do? Where does he go? But if he goes to another team, which team can take him in, pay his wages and play him regularly? It's a difficult one for him. I certainly think when you look at in the past, he's always wanted to be that star player. And now with Vlahovic coming in, is he going to be that? No. So it's tricky. And for Juventus, it's tricky as well because do they want to then lose him to a rival? Probably not. But Vlahovic has got to be the number one, the key player that they built that team around. That was the statement they made in the window. That's a statement that I think was a correct one to gamble on and to go for. And, you know, I think around that negotiation table would be fascinating because I just feel that both parties, ironically, it's like a marriage where they don't want to break up, but it's probably for the best. But none of them really want to leave. And so I'm fascinated by it. And it's a really difficult one to answer. I mean, one answer for you, though, would be if Dybala signed the contract and said, listen, I want to play with Vlahovic. And then, you know, if Allegri can do that, then my God. But again, you know, it's difficult. So that is really going to fascinate me. So sorry, it's a bit of a woolen answer, that one.
Because you could really make a case, okay, now you have Vlahovic in one sense, you can move on from Dybala. On the other hand, I think Dybala and Vlahovic have been pretty exciting together. Then on the other hand, you're like, maybe this is the guy that playing next to unleashes more Dybala. So it's not an easy situation. So let's look to the flip side of the Vlahovic situation, and let's look at Fiorentina, another team that you collaborate with. And look, you know, to me, the Vlahovic thing, you can look at it in a couple of ways. On one hand, you could say, yeah, it's absolutely horrible that we keep losing our best players to Juve. Totally get that. On the flip side, they at least did get a lot of money for Vlahovic, and they're eventually going to get a lot of money for Chiesa. So it's not like the Donnarumma situation. You do get money back for your assets. And look, Milan's been able to you know, do okay losing players for nothing, but that's not always going to be the case. So what do you make about Fiorentina's situation? I do get what Comiso is saying, that, look, at least we moved on from Vlahovic. We don't have this piano hanging over our head. This situation's done. We got a lot of money, and we can kind of start a new cycle. Do you kind of agree with this frame of mind, or do you see it more, well, look, if at the end of the day your players are just going to keep going to Juve, what's the point?
I think it's context here, and I think when, you know, when both sides, it does feel like the fans and on one side of Rocco Commissario on the other, but for both, and you know, fans aren't always the most compromising, and why not, why should they be? It's their club, they're the ones who are there forever, and Rocco Commissario, you know, he's the one putting the money in. So, but realistically, there is context, and for me here, it depends on a few things. Of course, it's going to hurt when your players always go to the, you know, your rivals. Historically, this has been an issue, as we all know. But again, if Vlahovic doesn't want to be there and he does want to go, and that's the right price and the right move that he wants to go, you know, yes, you sell him, you reinvest the money, and at the moment, you know, Arthur Cabral and Piatek have to step up to the plate, as well as Ikone, and really show that money can be invested well, you know. It's hard from Rocco Commissario's side, from my point of view, I think, because, you know, he's got to do the best commercially for the club. And I feel that he's got a real can-do attitude. And he's proved that in his past, in his career. But can-do attitude and Italy don't always mix. And so in so many different, all of his plans, I believe what he says, I believe his plans, and I believed he didn't want to sell Vlahovic in the beginning, and I believe that he didn't want to, you know, wanted a new stadium. But when you get down to the nitty-gritty of Italy, it's so difficult to do anything in that sense. So, yeah, look, it's, I think right there, I think if these, you know, the forwards that have been brought in start really performing to the second back end of the season, in what is a quite an exciting project, then, yeah, you know, maybe Vlahovic will be forgotten about and be put in those, in the annals of the the book that is creating players that went to Juve.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about Napoli. So I'll tell you this. I thought Inter getting that point at the Maradona Stadium was a huge brick towards getting closer to the Scudetto. So I thought it said a lot about Inter because they did make a good comeback in the second half. But on the flip side, I think it also says quite a bit about Napoli, because here were Napoli, they get past the Africa Cup. They're pretty much in the same position in the standings than before the Africa Cup. And they survive Osimhen's injury. So if you're a Napoli fan, you're like, wow, everything broke our way. We have our chance. Inter are coming to our stadium. And it feels to me that once again, they get right to next door to get to where they need to be. And it even, they've changed managers and they're still there. Do you think it's almost inevitable with this group? And look, Insigne is already on his way out, but you know, this group with like Koulibaly, Fabian Ruiz, Mertens, Zielinski, like these guys that have been there for a while, do you think that like this is just as far as this group can go and they just can't get over the hump for whatever reason?
I think you make a really good point, because Napoli for a few seasons has seemed like a side that have been that, you know, on the verge of challenging for the Scudetto. But when you look and you start really breaking down that squad, the coach isn't happy. There's conflict in the group. A lot of the players are looking older, and can they still perform? They've had some very interesting loans in and out at certain times over the years. And, you know, then there are some squad players that are questionable of whether, you know, the likes of, I don't know, Andrea Petagna can really, you know, come in as a solid substitute. I'm not singling him out by any reason. You know, it's just the fact that when you look at when you look at Alex Merritt and David Ospina, you know, you've got two camps again. Insigne, like you say, he's on his way out, and the unthinkable, the Neapolitan boy, Mertens, as you rightly say, getting older. So, and then when you look at Laurentiis, you think, well, has he really got a plan to regenerate this squad? Do they really have a way looking forward? I'm not so sure. I think they're more reactive than proactive. But Luciano Spalletti's been doing unbelievable things there. So it does feel like, you know, they are pushing everything behind this to try and get some glory, because ultimately I do think Napoli are going to probably have a little bit of a slump if they don't come up with either A, quite a bit of money, or two, you know, a bit more of a plan.
Yeah, because, you know, I look at their squad and I look at their starting 11 and I was like, these are as good as pretty much any team. And I think they are deeper than maybe people realize. So, yeah, it's just a little frustrating because they get oh so close. So let's close on the two teams in the capital. Lazio have been on a surge. They've been playing well. Sarri has integrated some players that were having a rougher time at the beginning. Surprisingly, their defense got a lot better once Acerbi got hurt. So are you surprised that Lazio's been kind of turning the corner? I think they've been pretty impressive.
I enjoy watching Lazio. You know, it's always the old additive where, for me, what's interesting is, you asked me about Lazio probably a few times when I've been on, and because the team is, because of finances and because of just the way they're structured, we've talked before, even going back in the day, we talked about Felipe Anderson, but we've talked about the likes of Radu, we've talked about the likes of Acerbi, Immobile, Luis Alberto, Milinkovic-Savic. And my answer has always been to you that as long as that core group stay fit, Lazio could even touch potentially Champions League. The interesting thing for me now is what Maurizio Sarri is doing, and you rightly alluded to it, is that some of these squad players now, he's getting the best out of them. And it makes Lazio look more of a complete group, because if someone does drop out, which I mentioned before, they've got people who come in, like Luis Alberto hasn't probably played as much as he wants to at certain times, and someone else has. And they've sort of intertwined it. And they still play this, almost like I'm not saying like Atalanta, but they're getting that, they almost have a project that's at the very start of something like Atalanta, where they can, everyone in the group knows their job. And as I said, they're interchangeable. So apart from probably Ciro, of course, but it's, I'm excited to see what he'll do. And I think Lazio will have a good end to the season.
So let me ask you about Roma, and obviously you have a soft spot for Mourinho, and rightfully so. So let me ask you this, because on one hand, you can make the case that they're really not any better in the standings than they were under Fonseca. I think, you know, they've supported Mourinho on the market. I think in both windows. So what do you make of Roma? Do you think they are where they are supposed to be? Would you have expected a little bit more from them so far?
It depends on what it's with Roma. I feel like one day I'll sit down and watch them and go, wow, okay, Mourinho's actually even change his philosophy a little bit. He's modernizing it a bit. And you can see that, you know, at times, you know, Tammy Abraham looks really good. You know, you've got players throughout that team who are looking like they look really cohesive, and you think, yeah, and they're playing nice football. And, you know, I like the fact of seeing people like Ashley Maitland-Niles come in and do quite well. And, you know, you're looking at like Sergio Oliveira looks exciting and all of these different aspects, but then you can watch them again and they look absolutely dire. And it's almost like, and this is only my interpretation of it, and so this is the one, because I find this one a difficult one as well to answer. It's almost like Mourinho knows his own self and his go-to position of that football he used to play. And it's his defensive, in himself defensive is what I'm talking about. It's his go-to position at all times. But it's like at Roma, he came here and thought, you know what, I'm going to try and do this expansive football. It's modernizing. And it's like he doesn't trust himself to do it. And sometimes the team reverts back to his old ways. And I think that maybe not the team, but he's struggling with the identity of what he wants this Roma team to be. Even in the comments now and the media, that they were saying, oh, Mourinho, even though he's been backed, he wants to rip it all up and start again. Well, maybe his, you know, what he's done in the past allows him to get that chance, but I would like to see him just really go for broken and try to get this team just to go all out attacking. And I think that'd be a real entertaining thing that happened. But I'm not sure. I think Roma out of Roma and Lazio will probably fall off quicker.
Okay, before I let you go, Richard, just one more plug for what's going on at Inter. Tell our listeners when they can check out the pod or what you guys are doing on Twitch, anything at all that we can help to spread the word.
No, thank you, David. Yes, the podcast is on the Inter website. If you download that, they're all on there. Then we're up to number 7 now already, which is good because we're getting some regularity, regular listeners. And obviously, if you want to send any questions, that's great. It's me and Thomas Lawrence who do that, and we do have some cameos from some of the players sometimes, or different guests. Twitch, you can also find on the Twitch app, or of course Inter's website as well, and that's also now in English. So that's Thomas Lawrence presenting from Milan. I am on as a guest on that. But then, for instance, before the Champions League, they had the likes of Thomas Bernini on and Paul Ince on. So that's more Thomas and myself in a different guise. And then, yeah, and hopefully we may be doing some Inter TV from Milan, both of us, for the game against Salernitana, which precedes the Liverpool game. So yeah, it's all on the website. So, and on my Twitter, I keep it posted, probably a bit too much, but it's on there. So
great stuff, Richard. Well, cheers to Inter for picking such a great person to do it. And thank you so much for always finding time for the pod. I look forward to chatting with you again before the season ends.
Oh, absolutely, David. Thanks again. I always love coming on here. It's I always have time for this podcast.
Okay, before we wrap up the pod, we haven't talked movies in a little while, so I want to talk a little bit about the recent Oscar nominations. I think was they kind of give us a pretty good idea of the state of the film industry. And I wonder how many people even care about the Oscars anymore. You look at how hard it was just for them to get some hosts for the show. It's just a really tough one to find someone willing to do it, which really says a ton about the state of that award. You know, there was a time that other than the Super Bowl, the most watched program in the U.S. was the Oscars. And, you know, had a huge pull worldwide. It's just not the case anymore. But I do think it was a solid to strong year for movies. I want to talk about some of the nominees that interest me. So they didn't go with Spider-Man as in the Best Picture nomination, although they had 10 nominees. I think the Academy Award is saying, you know what, we're not going full commercial. We are still going to have some standards of movies that we consider, and we think Spider-Man just doesn't fit into that. I think the fact that Dune was nominated, it's great. I thought it was a fantastic movie. But the fact that the director for Dune, Villeneuve, wasn't nominated, it's kind of a travesty. And it kind of shows that maybe they just hold those movies kind of in a different regard. And, you know, the reason they went to 10 nominations was there was so much outrage a while back when Dark Knight wasn't nominated at all. Heath Ledger did win a Best Supporting Actor, but it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. And they were like, you know what, we need to widen the net and have more nominees. So they didn't go all the way with Spider-Man, which I thought was a good movie. So Villeneuve not nominated for Best Director, which I think is kind of a travesty. I thought that was an incredible cinematic achievement. And, you know, if you haven't seen Dune on IMAX, I don't care how great your home setup, you haven't really experienced that. I've seen it twice on IMAX, once at home, completely different experience. You know, of the movies nominated for Best Picture, it's kind of interesting to see who's going to win. Power of the Dog was for a while the heavy favorite. Kind of a little bit like Roma a few years back. Both are Netflix movies that had a lot of a buzz, and ultimately Roma didn't win. I'm curious if Power of the Dog gets over that. I think Benedict Cumberbatch is going to win Best Actor, especially because that category, they really could have done a better job there. We could have had a really loaded Best Actor category. They could have included DiCaprio. And then they could have included Joaquin Phoenix, who I thought was superb and Come On, Come On, Come On, but that was a movie that very few people saw. Other movies that I think could be a dark horse to win is King Richard, although hardly anyone saw that because it's a Will Smith, so it could be a pretty commercial movie. Don't Look Up, obviously incredible star power. Leo wasn't nominated, but, you know, obviously has an amazing cast. I'd be very upset if Nightmare Alley won. Douglas, it's a bad movie. It looks fantastic, but to me, it's kind of like Shape of Water a few years ago. Literally no one has rewatched that movie, and I have a feeling Nightmare Alley, same director, would kind of be the same. Beautiful movie, but to me, it was kind of a little bit soulless. The movie that I really like and hope wins is going to be Licorice Pizza, but I doubt it does. I do think if you are a gambling person, an interesting pick would be for P.T. Anderson for Best Original Screenplay, because that usually is the Oscar you give to someone. Like Tarantino's won it, Jordan Peele won it for Get Out. I think it's kind of PTA's Oscar, and then I think in a few years he'll eventually win Best Movie and Best Director. I will tell you, a loaded category and is really, really good this year is the Best Foreign Movie. And I think that also says a lot about how different the movie industry is abroad than outside of the U.S. Have quite a few strong nominees. We have the Italian movie, The Hand of God, a fantastic movie. I really enjoyed that. It's not for everyone, but it's a great movie. I thought Flea, the animated documentary, was superb. And then The Worst Person in the World, probably the best movie I saw this year, other than Licorice Pizza. That movie was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay. So interesting there. But I think the lock in the Best Foreign Movie is Drive My Car, which I'm going to see this weekend. The reason I say that is it's nominated for Best Foreign Movie, and it's the only foreign movie nominated for Best Picture. So it's almost illogical that it wouldn't win, because if there's a movie better than it in the foreign category, that movie would have been nominated as well there. So if you're looking at gambling odds, that's probably a pretty good one. Parasite did win Best Foreign Movie and also Best Picture a few years ago. I haven't seen Drive My Car, so I can't say yet. I'd be very surprised, though, if that happens again. So those are some movie recommendations and kind of some categories to look at the Oscars. So I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. We really do appreciate it. If you like the show, consider becoming a patron. Please leave us a review on iTunes. I read them all. Please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify. That really helps us spread the word on the pod. So thank you so much, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.